This is Lewis Rogers, and you're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors in Richmond, Virginia. We have a great pleasure today of interviewing Willie Walker. Willie Walker is chairman and CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest commercial real estate finance companies in the nation. Willie, I'm going to ask you to go out on a limb one more time from the Walker webcast. Who is your favorite leader?
Admiral William McRaven, who was on the webcast. Many people who are listening to this may have seen his commencement speech at the University of Texas a number of years ago that has gone completely viral, and is he wrote a book after giving that speech called Make Your Bed. And after telling these graduates what they ought to do about careers and being bold and ambitious and all these other things, he said, at the end of the day, if you don't do anything else, make your bed every day, because you can come home and feel like you've accomplished something at the end of the day. And it was a great way to wrap up all these wonderful things that he'd said. But McRaven is one of those really unique leaders that, for me to be able to interview someone like him and talk to him about the operation to get Saddam Hussein. One of the interesting things on that, Lewis, that I did was, after having listened to him tell the story of launching the troops and SEAL Team 6 to go and invade the compound where Osama bin Laden was, I thought many of our listeners would have heard that story told by either McRaven or a SEAL many, many times over. So I jumped through all of the launching the team, the actual killing of Osama bin Laden and bringing the body back to the airbase in Afghanistan. And I jumped through all that and said, all right, Osama bin Laden's just gotten back. He's on the table. He's in a body bag. Take it from there. And what was so neat was McRaven went into a number of different stories from that point forward that were things that I hadn't heard him talk about before and were really insightful and enlightening and a lot of fun to hear. And I thought it provided a perspective to that that few had heard before. And I was thrilled that he, if you will, played ball with me in going to that level of detail once they got bin Laden back and were trying to figure out whether it was actually him before the DNA samples had come back to confirm his identity.
Let me downshift for just a moment. And I'm thinking back to Sun Valley, 90 degree day with people ice skating. We never did figure out how you can have ice in 90 degree weather, but I'm about to skate on some thin ice here. A couple of years ago, I think it was 2018, I hardly knew you, hardly knew anyone at Walker & Dunlop. That was my first conference. I show up at the first session with a cup of coffee and a notepad, ready to understand how cap rates and interest rates work. And you made a personal confession. You got up and you said something about how you'd ruined your life and you were going to tell us how you rebuilt your life. I have to ask you, what possessed you to discuss your personal life in public and to bare your soul with your most important business colleagues?
So I think, Lewis, that there was nothing else in the world that was more important to me at that time than the journey that I'd gone on, what I'd learned during that journey, and how that journey had made me a better person. And so it wasn't, if you will, a discrete decision to say this will be beneficial to them. It was, quite honestly, almost a confession that said, if I've got to talk about what's on my mind, this is all that's on my mind.
Was it a game time decision, or had you prepared to tell us about things that were very personal and somewhat shocking to a stranger?
So I had clearly thought the speech through a number of times as it relates to how I would tell it and what parts of the story I would keep in and what parts I would edit out. I will say that the night before giving that speech, I had a moment where I sort of said, oh my gosh, and that wasn't
risky.
That wasn't what I was actually thinking, but I won't say it on your radio show. I can't believe I'm going to do this. What's my backup in case I chicken out when I get up on stage tomorrow? And I guess, fortunately, I hadn't worked on a backup speech, so I had nothing else to say. And so I was, to some degree, forced to talk about what I went up there to talk about. But I think the biggest issue on it all is that what I had discovered in my wife saying that she wanted to get separated and divorced was that the way that I was living my life was not what I should have been doing. And in the process of identifying that, my wife handed me a book, which was about anger and anger management. It was a book that she'd handed me 4 or 5 years previously. And as a quite type A, hard charging public company executive, I thought that my rougher edges at certain times were what made us successful. That if I got mad at somebody, if I pushed somebody to do something, that edge was not only warranted, but created great value. And as I dove into looking at this, reading this book and understanding more about the drivers of my own personality, I realized very, very quickly that that was completely wrong. And that edge that we associate sometimes with hard charging executives or coaches who are trying to get that additional performance out of their players is completely false. To use an easy one, Bobby Knight was a fantastic basketball coach because he understood the game of basketball and coached his team to play better than the competition. Bobby Knight's anger was not the special sauce that made his teams perform. And so as I dove into my own behavior and the way that I used anger and got angry, I realized that there was no place for it in my life. And so that speech that I gave was in understanding that, and then quite honestly, creating either you could call them coping tools or a rewiring of my own processing to make it so that when I found missed expectations in either my personal life or in my work life, that the missing of those expectations didn't trigger anger, upset, and bad behavior. And fortunately, while I can tell you with absolute 100% certainty that I still get angry and that I still get frustrated about things, I am much, 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 much better at dealing with missed expectations in both my personal life and my professional life and how I deal with them than I used to be prior to doing all that work.
That's helpful. I've been informed by a Capital Squares COO that I have a bad temper. And every now and again, when I think I'm teaching somebody a lesson, I'm just being offensive and hurting their feelings. So what's the name of the book?
Taking Charge of Anger, and it's by someone called Dr. Robert Ney, N-A-Y.
I'm going to shift gears one more time. A couple of business topics here. Interest rates. What do you see in your crystal ball for all of our listeners who are borrowing, have loans to refinance? What's up with interest rates? The 10-year treasury today is a shocking 1.2 something. So good luck predicting.
So I would say this, A, because we are a very large lender, I learned my lesson early to not try and predict interest rates, and I try and stick with that. So I'm not going to try and predict anything here. I would say a couple other things. One, some very, very smart people believe that interest rates must go up and are, if you will, shorting interest rates, meaning that they think that interest rates will go up, and including a number of big prognosticators who were out in Sun Valley the week before you and I were here at the Allen & Company conference. At the end of the day, interest rates have basically, as you well know, Lewis, since 1980 to today, have been on a downward slope from 15% prime rate in the end of 1979, all the way down to the rate that you just talked about on the 10-year treasury today. At the end of the day, we're at a time that is obviously unprecedented. And at the same time, all times are unprecedented. No one knew what the world would look like when Paul Volcker started to tighten back in the 1980s under Ronald Reagan. Nobody knew what would happen when we did QE1 and QE2 coming out of the great financial crisis. And no one knows what's going to happen now that the federal government continues to print a lot of money and rates are at astoundingly low levels, given what's going on in the overall economy and the growth that we're seeing in the economy. Who knows whether Jerome Powell will be correct that the inflationary pressures we're seeing today are transitory or whether they're permanent. Clearly, if they are permanent, we've got some real problems coming up in front of us. If they are transitory, he's going to have basically shown all of us that the Fed's data is better than the market's data, that they're seeing things in their data that tell them that it's transitory when many, many, many investors and market commentators believe that it is not. But while there is so much excess capacity in the market, there's excess labor today, there's excess capacity in the built environment almost everywhere other than in housing. Until all that excess capacity gets actually picked up and put back to work, we're in a squeeze right now. We're in a squeeze of this economy having been put basically on mothballs for a lot of 2020. And now we're back at hyper growth, and that's the squeeze that's going on. If the squeeze ends up being transitory, to what Jerome Powell says, we probably get really good GDP growth and we probably don't need to see interest rates go up. If the squeeze ends up being long-term massive inflationary pressure because we can't build up the supply of new chips for automobiles, get people back to work once the incentives that the federal government has in place today for them not to be working. And September 6th is a very big day because that's when the supplemental $300 a month unemployment benefits run out, and a bunch of other things. If we don't see that supply being picked up, you're going to get inflationary pressures. We're going to see prices going up, and we're going to see the Fed have to raise rates. And so I would just say that right now, I don't have any reason not to believe Jerome Powell, not to believe that this is transitory. And at the same time, we all know what happens if he's wrong, and time will tell. So it's a, at the end of the day, it's an incredible time to be in the asset space. You own assets.
Yes.
Where we have seen inflationary pressures since the great financial crisis is not on the consumer side of how much a car costs you, even though you're seeing that now, or how much, as Eddie Murphy famously said in the movie Trading Places, buying a G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip. We're not seeing inflationary pressures on the consumer side. Where we're seeing inflationary pressures is on the asset side. And so I believe, as Peter Linneman said very clearly on our webcast 2 weeks ago, you ought to own assets, and you ought to finance as much of those asset purchases as you can with very cheap debt, because his belief is debt stays cheap and assets are going to continue to appreciate in value. And so that's why there's so much equity capital flowing into commercial real estate today, because people are buying hard assets like you are. They're putting very cheap debt on them to buy them. And that combination today, and for what many people project for the next 5 to 10 years, is the place to make money.
Well, that's an excellent segue to the next discussion about multifamily investing. After meeting Dr. Linneman on your webcast and calling him, Capital Square engaged him as our economic advisor, and we asked him to write a white paper on multifamily investing. And can you guess the title?
Golden Age of Multifamily.
It's amazing. Golden Age of Multifamily Investing. He took us through a litany of positive features, including inflation. We have 1-year leases compared to net leases that might be 10 or 15 years before you can renegotiate. And he taught us a great deal. Have you known Dr. Linneman a long time? You call him Peter. I call him Dr. Linneman.
So Peter is just about to turn 70 years old. And so I ought to call him Dr. Linneman, but I've known Peter long enough that I get away with calling him Peter. I have known him for quite some time. He is incredibly insightful. He's also one of the kindest and most generous people that I know. The reason he spent his career at Wharton teaching is because he has that desire to give back. And while his career has been focused on teaching and giving back, don't have any doubts about it. Peter's been a very, very successful and savvy investor in commercial real estate and has done an incredible job of investing and guiding people on their investments. And as it relates to multifamily, I think one of the things that's important to keep in mind is that Peter is at his heart an economist, and he's also a data-driven economist. And so Peter may have his own investments. Peter may be advising people who own office buildings or retail or industrial or single-family homes. But at the end of the day, Peter's going to tell you what the data tells him from his view as an economist. And so if it wasn't multifamily, he'd tell you it's not multifamily. He wouldn't write a report to make multifamily feel great, because that's what Capital Square does. And so when I hear Peter at the beginning of this year, when single family housing was the hottest market out there, when I hear him at the beginning of this year, when industrial and Amazon distributing goods across the country through all their distribution facilities was the hottest asset class in commercial, when I think about that, and he said at that time, it is a golden era for multifamily, you know that it's the data that's telling him that. It's not a headline. It's not CNBC saying single family homes are falling off the shelf and you got to go buy one today, or that industrial and online retail sales are what are driving the economy today. He's going at what the data says as it relates to immigration, as it relates to inflation, as it relates to supply of capital, as it relates to the experience that we've had in multifamily for the last 20 years, where when you think about the great financial crisis and you think about the pandemic, those are two wipeout scenarios. And through both of those, multifamily held up better than any other asset class, any other asset class. So what he's identifying there, Lewis, and which you have accurately identified and which Capital Square has accurately identified, is that while multifamily is a fixed asset, while multifamily is commercial real estate, because of the dynamics of the operating model, because people must live somewhere, unlike office, unlike retail, unlike industrial, unlike hospitality, multifamily can endure these downturns. And at the same time, it is a growing asset class. So you get, if you will, bond-like characteristics of these very steady income streams because people have to live somewhere. And at the same time, because of the growth dynamics in the sector, because of immigration, because people who are starting families need to live somewhere, you get equity type returns. So wherever you can get bond-like characteristics of a market with equity type returns, investors are going to continue to put money there. And that's exactly what Capital Square has been able to do for your investors.
It does bring me back 15 months ago in this chair, on this laptop, when our HR director said, you will be working from home for a while. And I said, you can imagine what I said, but we did. And on our first asset management call, I asked the head of asset management, how are departments doing? And he said, great. How are collections? 98, 99%. I said, what? 98, 99%. I said, what do you think they'll be next month? 98, 99%. What do you think they'll be a year from now? 98, 99%. Well, we've gone 15 months of audited numbers at 98, 99% on 8,000-9,000 apartment units in the Southeast. And so after that conversation 15 months ago, Capital Square made the decision not only to double down, but to triple down on multifamily and to focus on it. And it has absolutely led to the growth of our company, where we've become the second largest sponsor of 1031 DST programs in the country. We have a very large opportunity zone development business. We have an apartment REIT, and many of those things key back to Dr. Linneman and Peter telling us that, yes, there is a migration from the gateway cities. Yes, there's job growth in the Southeast. Yes, there's rent growth that's somewhat off the chart and somewhat undetected, and housing is a necessity. You don't have to shop at the mall, but you better have a roof over your head. And so multifamily has been an absolute phenomenon for Capital Square. It's been driven by buying the right assets in the Southeast with the right debt. Thank you to our bankers at Walker and Dunlop, and the asset managers who've overseen them, and the property managers who manage them, and the accountants who account for them, and the salespeople who raise the money for them. And then we're starting to sell multifamily properties that are 4 or 5 years old, and they're bringing record prices off the chart. We're selling properties at prices that are absolutely music to the ears of our investors. One last question for you. You have 1,100 employees, 38 offices, you're a public company. What keeps you up at night?
You know, I would say a lot and nothing.
A lot and nothing. You could be a politician with that answer.
Yeah, you know, there's always something to be worried about, Lewis, and you know that extremely well, given your success and the size of your company. There's always something there. I think all I would say is that as CEO of a reasonably large company that always has issues coming up, I get paid to deal with those issues. I get paid to use my knowledge and my experience to help my team get through the problems. I don't get a lot of the great stuff. When everything's going perfectly, people don't come and say, hey, Willie, I've got to talk to you to celebrate how great a deal we just did or some great hire. Yes, I get to celebrate with the team all the time. But at the end of the day, what exceptional leaders and managers are paid for is dealing with those problems. And so when I've got a lot of problems on my mind, I try and think about the fact that that's what I'm good at. That's why I've been able to do what I've been able to do, and to embrace it. Because the moment that there are no problems, you're retired.
That's a great answer.
This is Lewis Rogers, host of The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. I have just interviewed Willie Walker, CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest agency lenders in the nation. Thank you, Willie, for your thoughtful insights. Join us next week to learn more about tax-advantaged real estate investing. Living in the sweet Virginia breeze.
Sweet Virginia breeze. The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Lewis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.